construct or engineer our labs, our thing always is, what is the most compliant and digitally enabled way, digitally anchored way to achieve this? And that's held us in good stead, because actually, ironically, we are finding out the more we invest in this, the better the footprint is. So I'm going to breeze through the next 15 slides, and I want to get to my final slide, which talks a little bit about what I have learned in about 4 or 5 years. And I'll do my final slide right now, so in case I run over time, there's no need. Yeah. If you get nothing from my presentation, just leave with the fact that while we are in an industry that competes, this is something we can all collaborate on. The planet is not going to be healthier if Gilead achieves net zero by 2027 if the rest of the companies don't. There isn't, you know, I appreciate it. There is no biome over Gilead Sciences Foster City that says you've achieved it, ergo you are exempt from the punitive impacts of, you know, climate degradation. This is one where we have to collectively achieve it together. So the reason I like doing this, it spurs an element of collaboration which is very foreign in the biotech industry. We have been grown up on a diet of competing. Gilead v. GSK, Gilead v. XYZ, Gilead v. J&J. This is one where I feel the air of collaboration is not just refreshing, it's actually needed to get to where we all collectively need to be. Right, so that's one aspect right now. The second aspect around this is, we're past the point where sustainability can be a feel-good initiative and all about us. Right, when I speak to CSOs around the world, you can almost split them up into people who really care about the planet and purpose, and people that want to make it about them. This is not a sexy initiative. This is not about, you know, holding the green activism flag and saying this is important to us. This is real, right? I mean, this is real stuff that needs to get done. And I think the days of greenwashing are fundamentally over. And it's not because the SEC rules are being debated or we're getting there right now. 2 to 3 years from now, we are going to have audit-grade, investor-grade materials that come out. And investors will actually put their money where the sustainability pledges are right now. And that's where companies are making progress. So I leave you with these two, right? I think the time for rhetoric, the time for discussion is gone, the time for results. And this is where, if you're in a space where you can accelerate an enterprise or company's sustainability ambitions, you're in a fantastic space. But again, I promise you I'll leave you with my punchline first, which is this is something that conferences like these, they're imperative, because I want to leave, and hopefully you will leave, with things that work for us, and collectively I think we'll end up making the only people that only thing that benefits by this collaboration truly is the planet. So with that, the entire talk is focused around how does Pharma 4.0 act as an ESG catalyst. Just a quick show of hands, do people know what Pharma 4.0 and generally aware of it? Okay, I'll just give you a quick introduction to Pharma 4.0 then. Applying the 4.0 frameworks to ESG, a little bit about our ambitions. I have a couple of use cases around how we've used machine learning, artificial intelligence, robotics to try and actually accelerate the sustainability, and then looking forward to the final thought. So Pharma 4.0 basically is an industrial revolution. It's a term that basically said that 1.0 was the motor, 2.0 we had steam engines, 3.0 was when high-speed computing came about. These are basically inflection points in the entire evolution of humanity where there were dramatic changes made to the nature in which we operate, right? The last big one was computing. When the personal computer came out and it became part and parcel of what we did, it was called 3.0. The general thesis is 4.0 is here, and it is characterized by things like IoT, cloud, compliance, AI, digitalization of manufacturing, and the promise is that 4.0 will unleash a level of productivity unbeknownst, and you're already seeing that right now. You're unable to have a conversation without Netflix picking it up and recommending a movie to you. Right? You will, at the end of this, I will have 7 emails in my Gmail about something I said today. Right? That is what's happening right now. And the hope is that if channeled and harnessed well, it can lead to unprecedented levels of productivity. So why am I hopping on Pharma 4.0? The genesis of 4.0 came from efficiency. It was around, can we revolutionize drug development? Can we sequence things faster than human ingenuity can? Can we actually get down to where, are there drugs that actually work today that we have ignored and rejected because the clinical trial wasn't designed well. And it worked in a subset of population that, yeah, but because the trial called for a factor of 30%, 40%, a higher p-value, so this is where Pharma 4.0 was supposed to unleash that productivity. A sub-surrogate benefit of this, as we were trying to implement 4.0 within Gilead, was ESG. Most companies have a three-step plan on ESG, right? They have an ambition, net zero by XYZ. Number two, you have a materiality assessment. What is material to you? It could be farm, waste, product, water, carbon for us. And then when you have a materiality assessment or pledge, you come up with a roadmap that says, over the next 20 years, I will embark on these 275 projects. If executed well, we'll achieve this. You know the biggest problem with that? It assumes your business is static. And every time your business grows, guess what grows? Your greenhouse gas emissions. And it's not like we are, the regulators don't allow us to index it. So if we, it's not like a greenhouse gas per person is lower. They're like, no, that doesn't make a difference. It's one planet, right? You're consuming resources. So if you acquire a company, which we are in biopharm, we often do, everyone's happy except for me because it's added to my greenhouse gas footprint. And I've got to figure out a way to get an offset or find a way to take that operation and embed it in the most net zero way. So that's the fundamental notion. You make the pledge, you do what's material to you, and then you monitor it. That's the, at a broad level, at a broad brush level, that's what every CSO is doing. The issue with this approach right now is it very heavily indexes on two things, right? It indexes on trying to minimize your footprint by outsourcing. Have you guys heard of scope 3 emissions, by the way? Scope 1 and 2 is everything within your area. Scope 2 is the electricity that comes in, everything outside your four walls, but you use to run your four walls. Scope 3 is outsourcing. So the way to get to net zero fastest is outsource every operation, because then it's not your issue, right? We will all be flying the net zero flag on Wall Street Journal, right? And then we will make this someone else's problem till the regulators catch up and say, well, you've got to take your scope 3 and fix that as well, right? This is where I genuinely believe Pharma 4.0 can have a huge play, because what Pharma 4.0 does, it balances the best of automation and the best of people. The framework that it is, and I'd encourage you, if you guys just go to the World Economic Forum website, you'll see all the technologies that classify as 4.0 technologies. And the best part of using automation for your ESG strategy is actually, it's consistent, it's rational, it's efficient, you can process vast amounts of data, and eventually then if you marry it with people, you're able to actually get to where you are doing both. In our case, delivering innovative medicines while committing what's right for the planet. So our entire 4.0 strategy, and I've got a couple of use cases, is where most companies go pledge, material, and roadmap, we go at Gilead, here's our pledge, net zero by 2030, reduce water by 25%, have your baseline. We take a look at pledge, material. What is the digital construct that can take the unit operation and make it most sustainable, right? And then eventually, results. To the point where, you know, when we outsource our work, we actually have sustainability as a criteria with who we do business with, right? So most companies have cost of goods, quality, et cetera. We actually have 25% weighting. I also manage the procurement group. So the chief procurement officer reports to me, and I remember the first time I told her we have 25% weighting on sustainability. She was shocked because she's like, well, that eliminates half the suppliers we can do business with. And I'm like, no, let's do something else. Let's reward suppliers that want to be sustainable but don't have the capital to do so. So we have a co-investing model as well. And eventually what led to this right now was that not only did you end up getting terrific suppliers who believed in it, we actually found a set of suppliers that shared the same values we did, right? And that is liquid gold, right? Because you talk about, I mean, you can do a term sheet and a contract, but when you get suppliers that actually share the same ethos on sustainability, that's the force multiplier effect, right? Our Gilead ambitions right now, I'll just go very quickly over this because I really want to get to the two or three use cases around 4.0. We want to create a healthier world for everyone. Health equity, people, innovation, environment are the four elements. Here are some of the results we've achieved in the last 3 years, and I'm only showing this to almost self-validate the fact that what I'm going to share is not BS. This is what we achieved in the last 4 years. We're LEED Platinum. We went from having zero LEED green certified buildings to 24. We have the only company that has three LEED Gold buildings in a research HQ. 78% of our HQ campus is green certified. We've been named a CDP leader. We are ranked number one in a bunch of philanthropy, plus we've got the Dow Jones and Sustainability Index recognition. But our entire thing started off with defining a strategy, achieving everything that we did on the building infrastructure, to the point where we are right now, where, and this is what I'm most proudest about, is with all these certifications and all the stuff, is we have now developed a toolbox where you are not able to do an engineering project on campus without it being sustainable. So if I ask one of my engineers, build a building, but build it not LEED Gold, they won't know how, because our specs and our standards are all built to have that sort of bias in there. So here's some of the case studies we talked about, where if you're in the space where you're doing digital transformation, you're able to get some really, really good sort of bang for buck. We've got around net zero operations, water neutrality, waste. And now the one I like the most right now is the one I'll spend most time on right now is, I think I went too fast ahead, was case study one, which was using digital twin for API content uniformity. So we have production processes where we have to make sure that the content of our tablets are very, very important. They're actually in the assessment of dosage performance and determination of the active and pharmaceutical ingredient content size. It was the most time and resource intensive process out there. Using a bunch of AI tools, using Monte Carlo simulation, we ended up predicting table passing rates, and we dramatically, by 96%, reduced the number of experiments we needed to do and waste. So we took the most intensive process. Now, when I go to my CFO, I sell this as a cost savings project, right? Because he said, wow, 96% of the experiments are gone. Labor reduction, cost reduction, material reduction. But to Dow Jones Sustainability Index, I said that also means that 96% of the labor and the energy required to process this is gone. And it's all because we invested in this digital twin. Right, same thing right now with digital twin for stable energy consumption. Energy consumption right now is 16 to 17% of our GHG emissions. And a lot of it is because it's so unpredictable right now with the usage. So we actually put a bunch of machine learning algorithms across all our buildings, and we predicted the optimal energy optimization algorithm, building level, equipment level, based on historical consumption, and then we started factoring future weather predictions to sort of say, this is how we should actually cycle the loads across the overall building. And we achieved a straight 3% reduction in net zero. So when you think of net zero, you know, the only reason we're able to commit to an earlier timeline than our initial pledge is because we actually have ML algorithms that take future weather, current load, historical trends, and then recommend an optimal sort of usage algorithm. This is just one engineer working with ML, right? So my talk about taking the lazy option out for everything, this works, right? Because you're able to use digital operations to actually get these kind of results. The last case study is very similar. We found out, we did an audit around why some of our buildings are super high energy. Well, the scientists, when they get too engrossed in their science experiment, sometimes they forget to shut their hoods out. So we used to walk around the campus with all these hoods completely open, dramatically high use of energy. And we decided to then sort of use infrared sensors as well as vision cameras. But we also sort of looked at which of the buildings at any point in time was the most energy consumption. So this is the combination of the Pharma 4.0 model on slide one, where I talked a lot about the IR and the IoT, combining that with intensive algorithms. So what's next? And this is my penultimate slide, right? I talked a lot about, you know, the use of culture, the use of the use of digital tools. Our notion right now is that as an industry, we can pretty much optimize whatever we focus on. So we need to start building an ESG bias into everything we're doing in automation. All the automation tools right now in the industry, and we spend millions on automation tools, is focused on consistency, reliability, and predictability. But if you under the basics of linear programming says you optimize a function, you constrain the, you have 8 constraints, and you get to one optima, one local optima. I am an operations researcher, so I might just geek out on this for 5 minutes, right? But don't have much time. But if we start building an ESG optimization function saying, not only do you maximize to this content uniformity or this kind of milling operation or this kind of a tablet press sort of consistency, but you also optimize to a certain energy signature, you're actually able to run operations with the lowest carbon footprint out there. There isn't a tool out there. There isn't a tool today that actually uses ESG bias into our automation. So we're looking to partner with three or four firms to actually build this very ESG playbook around our sort of automation automation layer. All the automation that works on right now is all efficiency. No one is focusing on AI. When I go to Silicon Valley and I ask them, hey, anyone interested in AI for ESG? No, they're interested for AI for like generative learning, right? There's so many better use cases right now. This is a phenomenal opportunity waiting to happen. So this is our biggest sort of focus right now, is to build this ESG sort of bias into our automation. And the hope right now is that when we make these biased decisions, shut a few more off, optimize your entire energy utilization per operation. Those small biased decisions, when you add them and make these millions of decisions, will lead to much, much bigger things, right? So my final slide here is, and I'll end with this right now. Again, at COP29 today, when we present this, they're super interested in understanding these ML algorithms, and they're all homegrown right now and how we're able to achieve this. I'll end where I started off, right? I'm in the life sciences industry. Patient at the end of our supply chain, we get a lot of meaning. But when you have a medical need, people like me build facilities. Facilities have emissions that causes climate issues. We perpetuate the cycle of the disease cycle, and that creates more issues, right? So at some point in time, that cycle has to break somewhere. And I firmly believe the cycle should break at the operations level, right? I don't want my scientists or my researchers ever not pursuing a disease state or never purchasing a company because that is how you cure HIV. That is how you cure Hep C. That's how you cure cancer. They should never not prosecute molecules that get us to that place. Where people like me should be held more accountable is as you build these operations, stop beating your chest about you have a patient at the end of the supply chain, therefore your industry is holier than thou. You've got to account for the fact that that operation creates the emissions that creates more diseases. You know, as a father of a five-year-old asthmatic, I find it very interesting how people still deny air quality can have an impact, right? So those kinds of things are very personal to me. So they're not evangelical in nature, but they're truly part of my day-to-day job. And I just find it a tremendous blessing to work for a company where sustainability projects tend to be approved quicker and faster than most projects because we actually believe it's the right thing to do. I will end my talk here. I do appreciate the attention. I apologize if it came across a little bit too spiritual. It was intended to actually balance the motivation of why we do what we do, how we do it, but also those case studies as well as where we stand in our net zero progress should hopefully inspire people to realize that with the right investments of digital tools, with the right culture, the right advocacy, we'll all get there and the world will be a better place for that. With that, I really again appreciate you for giving me 15 to 20 minutes to talk about it, and thank you so much for the attention.
I can let him get off the stage. There's got to be a lot of questions in the room. Let's go
okay. And
bring them on. Would you raise your hand, please? Stand up and introduce yourself and be precise with the question. First one.
I am desperately sure this water is not mine and I might drink it, so I'm just going
I want to ask you a question.
Sure.
One third of the biotech industry is in our neighborhood here, of the United States, that is, right? How many chief sustainability officers are there, like you? Forget like you. How many chief sustainability officers are there? Let me be more precise.
I don't know the answer to that. I will say that, again, I don't mean to sound...
No, please sound... Be honest.
The best CSOs that I find are in the tech industry. Google and Microsoft, they do some amazing. Kate Brandt's phenomenal, right? You want an evangelical leader who I sort of, very often I steal her ideas because she's just so open about this. Within the biopharma industry, I mean, there are CSOs. So I don't know the exact number.
You're struggling, aren't you?
I'm very, So I actually don't know the idea. But it's something that we actually need to do a little bit better job, sort of.
The reason I asked the question, I took exception to that statement you made that the leaders of the industry are going to be all sustainability driven. Yeah. And I'm selfishly looking to my industry, life sciences. Yeah. And I wish there were more Jaideep Gangulis.
I don't think you need more Jaideep Gangulis. What you do need, I will say what you need, and I don't mean to be, so I'll just say this. You don't need to be a CSO to focus on sustainability. Some of the best projects that come, what you need is a sustainability culture. And what you need is you need to get away from, I think we're getting very polarized in saying this is some sort of a woke construct around activism. It's not. It's good for business. There's a reason why a lot of investors are investing in companies that focus on ESG, because they believe those companies are actually going to survive. An example I gave, when I started using sustainability as a criteria for firms, magically the total cost of ownership on all my buildings came down. Because as it turns out, the companies and the engineering firms that prioritize sustainability also tend to be ones that have very thoughtful designs. They tend to be very thoughtful, very deliberate about their work. So this is actually fundamentally good for business, which is why I actually think the next generation of CSOs are going to be ex-CFOs, right? People who see the value of this from an investor perspective, from a bottom-line perspective, and I think they get to understand this much, much quicker than operations heads, because you're far more erudite than I am on this space. For far too long, I see, you know, a lot of my colleagues who run operations, we've been incentivized on just pure drug supply. Patient's most important, get it out, no cost to them. That's been our auto winner, right? And it takes a different momentum to change that sort of culture.
You know, the reason I'm picking on him is I'm also an operations research guy.
Yeah.
It's easy to say that you need a sustainability culture. I've been looking around with a telescope and a lantern in the daylight, like Diogenes used to do in Greece.
Yeah.
Can't find them.
It's
easy to say that we need a sustainability culture. What you demonstrate today is a hands-on implementation of projects in different areas, very diverse. That gives us ideas, or maybe tomorrow or day after, what we can do.
Yeah.
This thing about culture is a big, tall order.
Yeah, I agree. So my only counsel there is don't worry about this being, make this not a compliance requirement. Don't force it down anyone's book of work. It'll come to a point where this space will be regulated. And building a culture is always tougher than achieving results, right?
Yes,
it takes time, it takes the right.
Yes.
And I think, you know, if you have a couple of strong advocates within your team who can do this, the tough part for us now, not tough part for us is I go back to my first statement, we got to inspire everyone else to do the same, because it does the world no good just to have a few companies do that.
That was a classic statement. Kumar, you got a question?
Yeah, I got a quick question.
Yeah, sure.
Would you please stand up and introduce yourself?
Sure. Team.
Question, please.
One thing that struck me was when you mentioned your CP, the procurement officer, kind of rolled into you.
Yeah.
Is that a function of you being the operations person that also has a responsibility for sustainability, or was that the other way? Was that sustainability first, and then you kind of had the organization roll into you that way? Because I think that is not what most companies have, and it has, in a way, kind of enabled some of the transformation that you've seen.
Yeah, fantastic question. The answer to that is we basically, when we constructed my role, we took a look at corporate strategy. Our strategy is 10 transformative therapies by 2030 while creating a world-class oncology franchise. But our CEO was bold enough to put the words, we will grow in a responsible, sustainable manner as a third tranche of the strategy. And that's not just environmental, health equity, access, getting the drugs to, you know, we need to get, oncology is as bad a problem in Bangladesh and Pakistan and India as it is here, right? So that part. And then we sort of said, what are the key decisions? And, you know, when I constructed the job description, I said, I need to know where to build, when to build, the capital budget, who to work with, how do we source our models? And then that's how the procurement function, the real estate function, the master planning function all came in one. And it's lesser about the leader who runs it, as much as the fact that my incentives are now commingled. I cannot get away by saying this biologics plant was built in 3 years. I'm excellent. They will sort of say, was it built at fair value? Was it built with suppliers? Did our suppliers flourish with us? That's how ecosystem works.
Sure.
Did we achieve the level of eco-friendliness we wanted to? And then eventually, did our total cost of ownership hold itself? So, because I also have the facilities group, which means I can't run away from my projects because I have to maintain them afterwards. So it's not like I can say the capital project's great and then afterwards pass the costs on, except for the manufacturing plants where we focus on drug supply. But I think creating these, I actually thank our CEO, who was very thoughtful about the fact that to get to where you have the right incentive, I mean, culture is all about incentives.
Absolutely.
Culture in a company, you can have all the fancy posters, it's about what you incent and what you punish. Now that's culture for me, right? And if you create the right incentives within the group, you get there, right? Did I answer your question?
You did.
You did.
Excellent.
Before I let you go, I just want to remind him that he and I come from a village.
Yeah, we do.
Where the Nobel laureate of India for literature, the only one, created an entire university built on the principles of sustainability and environmental richness.
Absolutely.
Tagore.
Rabindranath Tagore.
So thank you
excellent.
So
fantastic.
Much.
Fantastic. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.